Welcome to another GPS class preparation material. I look forward to being with you on Sunday. I hope you can join us. As you go through this material, it will prepare you for what we're going to talk about in class on Sunday. For those of you who may not have been with us before, the GPS class is Godly Parenting Skills. And just like the GPS gives direction in our lives, we hope that the GPS class will give parents and others who work with children some direction in helping them to understand children and their development and how we apply God's word to their lives to help them in their spiritual development. So we're focusing on the idea of, in this semester, of shepherding children's hearts. Often our approach to parenting and teaching children and coaching and so forth is applied to behavior and behavior patterns, which is a good thing. But if we don't back up and deal with the child's heart, what motivates them to do what they do, then we're probably not going to be able to be as effective in helping them as we would like to. I want to begin a new series of lessons under this heading of developing our biblical approach to shepherding children's hearts by looking at what I call the Romans approach to training children. And what I mean by Romans is not the the Roman culture, but the book of Romans. In this, I want us to focus in on the first chapter of the book of Romans in developing a Godward orientation in children. When you look at a sailboat, often you think about the direction that the sailboat is pointing, or the way that the wind is blowing is the way that the boat is going to go. But actually, the direction of a sailboat is not determined by the direction of the boat or of the wind, but it's by the trim of the sail. And in the same sense, the Godward orientation is like the set of the sail in a child's life. Whatever the shaping influences of life, it is the child's Godward orientation that determines his response to those shaping influences. And our involvement in a child's life will set their sails in the right direction. In addition to external influences that we've talked about so far, we also talked about three what I call bents of children, often reflected in their character and their personality. And you see it come out in their behavior, but it's often in their heart already. And one is toward the image of God. They were created in the image of God, Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. And because of that, they have a bent in that direction. If we help develop that, they'll become more God-oriented in their approach to life. But at the same time, they have a bent toward a sinful nature. It's the Greek word sarx, which is used in the book of Romans quite a bit. That sinful nature or flesh is that natural tendency in self-preservation and taking care of oneself that can often become sinful and selfish and self-centered. And then there's a third bent that children have, and that's inherited traits that they have in their family from their parents, their grandparents, their great-grandparents that make up part of their personality. And sometimes those things also can contribute to sinful behavior. These bents are the direction of the wind. That is how the boat is going to sail under normal circumstances unless something is done about the sail to change that direction, to make it maneuver in the wind in a different way. And so the sail, the setting of the sail, is the influence that we have on a child's life, whether we're a parent or a teacher or a coach. If we're able to have an influence in the life of a child, we're helping them set their sail to not necessarily just go wherever the wind takes them, but to go in the right direction. And the right direction, of course, is toward God. We want to influence our children to sail in the direction of God. According to Proverbs chapter 9, verses 7 through 10, whoever corrects a mocker invites insult, and whoever rebukes a wicked man incurs abuse. Do not rebuke a mocker, or he will hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Instruct a wise man, and he will be wiser still. Teach a righteous man, and he will add to his learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. This is verse 10. And verse 10 helps us see what ultimately determines whether a child responds as a mocker or as a wise man or woman. It is the fear of the Lord that makes one wise. And it is that wisdom that determines how he will respond to correction. If we really want to help a child to be completely successful in their life, we're going to have to start by making sure that their orientation is in the direction of God. The book of Romans provides some great insight into providing that influence in a child's life. Although Paul's letter to the Romans was written to address a sinner's response to the gospel and what it means to live as a Christian after responding to the gospel, it applies to a child responding to parental influences and other influences on their life that would cause them to go in a Godward direction. Romans applied to influencing a child's direction can be outlined according to the chapters in Romans. Chapter 1 deals with awareness and seeking and worshiping God. And God has made himself known. And if we're open to being aware of God, we will seek him and we will worship him. Of course, the other side of that is if we choose not to be aware of God or not seek him and not worship him, then we will become selfish in our motivation and we will try to serve ourselves rather than serving God. Chapter 2 deals with a morality that God has put within us, a sense of right and wrong that is within all of us, at least under normal development circumstances. And there are people who have never been taught about God or Jesus. They don't know Old Testament law. They don't know the Sermon on the Mount. But they have a sense of right and wrong that tends to guide them in the right direction, which will bring them closer to God by the way that they live their lives. And there is that within us. And if we develop that, of course, we're going to become more God-oriented in our lifestyle. The third chapter deals with sin. And we are all sinners. We all commit sin. We all do things that we shouldn't do. We all fail to do things that we should do. We violate our consciences. We know the right thing to do, and we end up doing the wrong thing. So we need to understand the influence of sin in our life, and we need to make the right choices when we're tempted to sin. Chapter 4 deals with faith. Faith is a personal sense of desire for a relationship with God. Not only is it believing that there is a God, but it's believing that I can have a relationship with him, and that causes us to act upon that faith, to have that relationship with God. So chapter 4 deals with faith. Chapter 5 deals with grace. The fact that we have faith causes us to realize that we cannot take care of our sin problem on our own, and we must trust in God's grace to forgive us. But grace is recognized in a relationship with God. It's not earned. If it were earned, it wouldn't be grace. We can't do enough to forgive ourselves. We can't earn that salvation. We can't earn that forgiveness. It comes by grace that comes through a relationship with God. And that relationship with God comes through a relationship with Jesus Christ. Chapter 6 deals with obedience. We're driven by this sense of relationship. In faith, we respond to what we're commanded to do. And we do this not in the sense that it's going to cause us to earn something, a blessing, forgiveness, salvation, so forth. But we obey out of our sense of relationship because we know this brings us into a deeper relationship with God. And knowing that He knows what is best for us, we respond to what He has commanded us to do and obey. Chapter 7 deals with the freedom that we have from this sinful nature that holds us captive, that we're imprisoned by our sinful flesh that wants to do the wrong thing for the reasons that are selfish and self-centered. And by breaking that chain, we have freedom from that sin, and we can do the right thing for the right motives, because, you know, we want to be deeper drawn into that relationship with God. And then chapter 8 talks about the Spirit, how the Holy Spirit helps us to live under the control of the Holy Spirit and not our sinful nature, not our flesh. And therefore, we can live the right life because that's what we want to live, because our hearts are motivating us to the right behavior. And so our relationship with God is one that's not just based on the right behavior, but it's the right motivation, the right heart. So all 8 of these apply to how we train our children, how we can help them live in a right relationship with God and have a right motivation for doing the things that will bless their life. So we'll look at the first one in chapter 1. Romans chapter 1, verses 18 and 19. The wrath of God is being revealed from even against all the godliness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth in their wickedness. Since what we may know about God is made known to us plainly, because He has made it plain to us. Now, I want you to think about this passage from the perspective of the fact that it's telling us that God has made Himself plain to us. He has revealed Himself in the world, and that we need to be aware of the fact that His presence is among us. Let me read the passage again in a little bit different translation. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For His invisible attributes, namely His eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks to Him, but they came futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools, and they exchanged the glory of God, the glory of the immortal God, for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. So when you look at this, the idea is that God has made Himself known to mankind. But man has a choice whether to believe that there is a God and to seek God and to worship God, or to begin to worship himself. We're all influenced by God, but we may suppress that truth that He reveals to us. And if we respond to God in faith, we find fulfillment in knowing and serving God. If we suppress God's influence, we will ultimately worship and serve the creation, or idolatry, or ourself, rather than the Creator. So God makes Himself known to us through creation. You know, aside from the Bible and, you know, your religion, your church, and so forth, of what we're typically thinking in terms of how we get to know God, God makes Himself known through creation. And just by that, we can become aware that there is a God. And becoming aware that there is a God, then we seek God. And when we seek God and we find Him, then we want to worship Him. But we may suppress the truth about God. We may deny that there are God, and then we will tend to worship also, But that worship becomes a worship of the creation, maybe even worship of ourselves. And we tend to become selfish in our lifestyle. So what we want to do is to help children to realize, even before they're ever able to read the Bible or anything like that, that there is a God, and be aware that there's a God, and to seek God and want to worship God. This little chart shows the difference in the two. A child may be aware that there is a God, and their whole world becomes God encompassing, if you will. The world is not just about them. It's not just about the self-centered approach to life, that I am my own world and the things that I want, the things I desire, the things that have to do with me is my world. My world is oriented toward God. The opposite of that, kind of turn that upside down, the creation around you, your own self kind of becomes your world, and you're still going to worship one way or the other. You're going to worship. You're either going to worship God and a world that is oriented toward God, or you're going to worship a world that is oriented toward you and become selfish. And again, it's about getting into the heart of a child and helping them to realize where the motivation needs to come from. So you have to choose between two ways. There's the figure on the left that is given to the influence of God. And so they see their world with that God influence as being good and kind and holy and beneficial. And they respond to God because of that in worship and service that is developed in goodness and kindness and holiness and benefit to others. That's the world that is oriented toward God. The world that is oriented toward the flesh, toward the creation, toward making oneself the center of their universe, it suppresses the influence of God and finds creation, himself, and the world around him as the most important influences in his life. And he responds to those influences in worship and service that is developed in a pattern of the impact of those influences, often self-serving and selfish and very negative to others. And it's a huge difference, a huge difference. And what it comes down to is how the heart has been oriented. If we're going to shepherd the hearts of children, we have to help their heart be motivated toward a God-oriented motivation, and then their behavior will follow. And we fool ourselves if we think we can be neutral, that we can be a good person in this world, and we don't have to be oriented toward God. Or we can be neutral and we don't have to be oriented toward God, but we can somehow be a good person in the range of being moral and just and good and so forth. And we confuse the issue. In developing children and developing their hearts, they have to have direction. They have to be guided in a direction. And we want to guide them in the direction of God. Because in those early formative years of their life, if they're not directed toward God, they're going to be directed towards self. You can't be neutral in this. So here's the application questions I'd like for us to consider this week. Number one, what do you think is the God orientation of your children? And you may say, well, my children are too young to really answer that question. Well, you may be surprised how early your children start picking up on the God orientation that you're trying to send them toward in their life. Are their lives organized around God as Father, Shepherd, Lord, Sovereign, King? Are you helping them to understand those things about God and about Jesus? Or do you see them living in some sort of pleasure, approval, acceptance, or some other false god? As children more and more begin to live their lives solely for pleasure, for approval of others, for acceptance by some human authority figure or someone who is an influencer in their life, they really are, whether we like to think of it that way or not, they're adopting false gods instead of the true Godward orientation that they need to have. Question number two, how can you design ways of challenging the idolatry you see within your child in a way that will win their heart? How can you design ways, now specific ways, of challenging the idolatry you may see developing within your child in a way that will win their heart? You can't wait until they become teenagers and say, oh, they may be going in the wrong direction. Start early. Now, if you do have teenagers, that doesn't mean it's too late to set the sails in a Godward direction. But you'll make your work so much easier for you if you'll start earlier than that and helping them to see that the selfish direction that they have bent themselves is going to get them in trouble down the road. And so challenge that idolatry. And that's a strong word, I know. But it's an important word that we understand, that we apply. Number three, how can you make your focus in correction the deeper issues of the Godward orientation? Now, this deals with discipline and correcting a child when they're going in the wrong direction. How can we not just confront the behavior and correct it, but how can we, in the process of making correction, get them on track to dealing with the deeper issues of a Godward orientation? How can you help your child see how he is investing himself in things that cannot satisfy him, that will not bring him the end result that he's trying to achieve out of pursuing them? How do we help a child get there? How do we help their hearts be receptive to God rather than a materialistic world? Are a selfish world, a self-seeking world? How do we do that? How do we help them get there? And number four, God is using you to direct your child's heart. That's just a fact. God is using you. That's why you're the parent, or that's why you're the teacher or the coach or whatever. God is using you to direct your child's heart. Are you letting God shape you in a way that will give Godward direction? It's hard for you to give children a Godward direction when you don't have a Godward direction yourself. So how are you letting God shape your direction? How are you letting Him help you be what you need to be so that you can help children? Specifically, what are you doing to have a Godward influence on a child? Are there some things that you need to change? Are there some directions that you're heading that will not help you do a better job of helping your child or a child on whom you have influence to have a Godward orientation? I want you to think about these questions this week. And when we get together on Sunday morning for class, we'll discuss them. I think this is a very, very important discussion. May God bless you this week. Stay safe, stay well, and we look forward to being back together again soon.